You're listening to The Food Talk Show, produced by Channel Radio. It's The Food Talk Show with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. Good afternoon, Sue. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. I'm enjoying the weather. You know, there's nothing I like better than a bit of sun and a bit of booze. I don't have any booze at the moment, but we have some sun. And I believe it's your birthday this weekend. And guess what's going to happen to the sun?
It's stormy, isn't it? There's a complete storm happening this weekend.
And you've got a barbecue, haven't you, with loads of people coming?
My kids said to me, okay, we better celebrate your birthday. What are we going to do? And I said, okay, we'll have a barbecue on Saturday.
Because the weather's nice.
Yeah, it's not my birthday until Monday. But I said, we'll have a barbecue on Saturday around the pool and everything. I look at the weather forecast. It's
raining.
Awful.
I know, terrible.
It's awful.
Terrible. Never mind. Shall I tell you a little bit about what we have today?
Yeah.
So we've got the lovely Sophie, who's sitting here nicely, with Alicia Catering. And food waste is becoming a real theme, I think, for the programme and coming up again and again. So Sophie's going to tell us about her very interesting company that deals with food waste. Then I've got the lovely named Andrew Tickle. That's a great name. And he runs a sort of farm that produces aronia berries. I have never heard of aronia berries.
You what?
Yeah, and I've been, you know, in food for quite a long time, never heard of them. So very interested to understand what aronia berries are. Just in front of me, Andrew's bought literally hundreds of products with him for us to taste, all made out of aronias. And I've got an aronia berry bush thing here, so you can have a look in a minute at what they actually are.
It's interesting, isn't it? They look a little bit like elderberries to me.
Yeah, they sort of hang down like elderberries. The leaves look a little bit like bay leaves to me, a little bit, and but they're much bigger. So they're almost like a cross between, to look at, I haven't tasted them yet, cross between sort of blueberries and elderberries. But they look lovely.
I'm sure we'll find out more about them in a minute.
All about that.
It's interesting to come across a foodstuff that we haven't
no.
even heard of, let alone tried.
Neither you or me have heard of it, so that's quite
absolutely.
Unusual.
Does it make alcohol in any way?
No, you're all right tonight. So today, you can taste all of it today.
So what's gone wrong then?
Well, I'm going to ask Andrew about whether we can, obviously I would, ask Andrew if I can make sort of like aronia berry vodka or anything like that. So I'm going to get his opinion on that later.
Blimey.
I'll make raspberry vodka, so I don't see why you can't make aronia berry.
But this must be the first show ever without alcohol on it.
Possibly. possibly. We've also got More Than Meat, so we've got a little clip with them in the middle of the programme. And I was just going to talk to you about unboxing, Paul. Have you heard about unboxing? It's a real phenomenon on YouTube. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I hadn't until recently, and I'm still not entirely sure what it is. It's something to do with young people, I think.
No, necessarily. that's not true. So it's a real phenomenon, I can never say that word, on YouTube, where particularly people will get new products. They'll not absolutely not understand how it works, what they do, and all that. And they start to unpack it, and then they use that product, and then they do a live review with a video camera, not edited, completely live, so that people can see when you've got a new product, how they've dealt with it, whether the packaging's good, if it's obvious how you use it. And they sort of do a live review, which is brilliant user testing, if you think about it.
I absolutely love that, because you know what it's like. You have a product, I mean, and a certain Swedish provider of flat pack furniture used to be famous for this, did they not? Where you'd get it home and you'd unpack it, and the actual instructions for assembling it had been translated from the Korean into the Swedish, and then half the screws were missing, or you had too many screws of the wrong size. And it would be very frustrating to actually put something together. So I can see why the phenomena of taking something freshly out of the box and reviewing how it actually is in real life would
because
be
let's
useful.
Face it, especially if you're a man, you never read the instructions anyway. So everybody wants... Yeah, you don't even know what those are.
Instructions.
So really what you want to see is how somebody, you know, picking it up, how they're using it, what they're doing with it, which is what people do with websites all the time. You do user testing for websites. So I think it's a great idea. I think maybe we should... Do you think we should do a little slot on the Food Talk Show? Maybe
wouldn't that be
the
fun?
Odd bit of unboxing. I think that'd be great fun.
That could be really interesting, couldn't it? Hey, yeah. What a good idea. We ought to do that.
Yeah, I'll have to think about that.
Mind you, you've got to be careful with that, because if you're going to make me swig things...
Okay, because it could be booze and you don't have it yet.
Yeah.
Well, I'll vet it beforehand. It's fine.
Oh, I see. You're going to test it.
No, what we might do, though, is do more of the sort of products rather than the actual food stuff. So there's some really interesting products for kitchen, gadgets. That could be quite good fun.
Spiralizers.
Oh, my God, and cut your fingers off.
I got a new spiralizer the other day.
Have you got one of those?
Yeah. I love spiralizers.
So what, courgettes and stuff like that? You
yeah, I'm not in? So I'm not so fussed about courgettes, but the squashes, you know,
butternut squash, and
butternut
like
squash
that.
Spaghetti, fabulous.
How do you do it then? Do you cook the butternut squash first?
No, raw.
Right. Oh, so it's raw. You shove it in the top.
You cut it into slabs, and then shove it through the spiralizer, and it makes like spaghetti shaped.
So what do you
peel?
What do you do? Make spaghetti bolognese, but have bolognese with butternut squash spiralized spaghetti.
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
No, it's really nice.
Why do you stop pasta?
That's really nice. Well, it's healthy. Allegedly, it's healthy.
Yeah, healthier, unless you obviously chop your fingers off when you're doing it.
Yeah, true.
Healthy. So we're going to talk to Andrew Tickle first, I think, about aronia berries. I'm really excited to learn about that. Mm. I guess you're going to do some tunage before we talk to Andrew.
I'm really sorry. I've got some cheesy tunage. But
nothing to do with Arconias.
Well, I searched and searched and searched. Really? And surprisingly, I couldn't find anything to do with aronia berries.
No.
Why? I mean, obviously a gap in the market. So, in fact, really sorry, Andrew, but this is the best I could do.
Why am I?
Sorry about that. Blackberry Way, the
move.
You
could have had Strawberry Fields Forever, obviously.
What?
As a song. Another berry, isn't it? Strawberry Fields Forever.
Yeah.
That's Beatles. Or...
I could have done Chuck Berry.
Oh.
My Ding-a-ling.
No. No.
No?
No, I'm going to change
the subject. So you're okay with Blackberry Way then?
Yeah, that's fine. I'm going to change the subject now. So I have Andrew Tickle with us. And we've already said that we've never, ever heard of aronia berries. And apparently they're a hardy bush with green leaves that turn deep red in the autumn with white blossoms. And they produce round, black, juicy berries. Now, we have some with us here. But I've been advised not to eat them, Paul, because they're about 2 weeks off being ripe. So I think they'd probably rip the inside of your gums off. So we won't do that. But as we described before, they look very much like elderberries, just much bigger.
Can I just ask Andrew, where are they from indigenously?
They're native to the United States, the northwest United States.
Okay.
And they came across to Europe in about the 1950s.
Okay.
All right, so they're fairly new. They're being labelled a new superfood because according to the NHS... In a laboratory study using pancreatic cancer cells, I've been trouble with my teeth today, aronia berry extract may help increase the powers of chemotherapy drugs in treating pancreatic cancer. Okay. So I think they're doing lots more research to see if there's anything in that. Mm. They've got one of the highest antioxidant levels of all berries, and they're packed full of vitamin C. And American Indians... with Andrew saying that they're over from America, American Indians believed they were a good aphrodisiac, Paul.
Why are you looking at me?
I don't know whether you need that sort of stuff or not. I'm just surmising. You're not going to answer that at all, are you? The Daily Mail once ran a story suggesting that aronia berries could be the most healthy berry in the world.
Wow.
Don't know what that was based on. Now, Andrew has lived at Johnson's Farm for most of his life, and he was looking to grow a crop which fitted into a niche market because the sort of soils he's got around the farm weren't that brilliant. They're pretty poor soil. Mm. Because he's situated right on top of the beautiful, beautiful North Downs in Kent. So he's got like grade 3 soil on the farm. Loads of flint. I don't know if anybody's ever been walking up there, but you know, there's loads of flint over chalk. Really difficult to grow anything. And he was looking for a hardy, woody plant with good roots. And guess what? Aronia berries have just got that.
I could have told him that.
You could have told him that. I don't think so. Now, he is the first grower in England to establish a commercial aronia berry plantation, and his first crop was produced in 2013.
Wow.
So, Andrew Tickle, I have never heard of aronia berries, and we've been involved in food and drink for a long time. How did you find out about them?
Well, like you said, I was actually looking for something completely different. Mm. So I was on the hunt for something unusual and something that would also fit my soil type.
Mm.
And looking around, we went back in the history of the farm, and it used to be big old fruit trees and hop fields and stuff like that. So it was obvious that you planted it once and then you left it there until the life of the plant had finished.
Right.
So it wasn't a question of digging it up every year or planting potatoes or crops like that. So it was a need to plant it and leave it. So that got us to hops, which we discounted. We then went to trees and orchards, which are so highly technical nowadays, they weren't worth... getting involved in because the scaling wasn't possible. That took us back to bushes, and the only bush I knew was the gooseberry bush, and I'd never heard of any other. So we found a paper which East Malling Research Station did for a Nuffield scholarship, and it had one line in, well, it had a pages and pages about black raspberries and this berry, and it had one line on aronia berries, and it said, could easily become a commodity.
And that I was thought, just one throwaway line.
And
what
that's
you thinking?
All it was.
Wow. I mean, the problem with gooseberry bushes, of course, is that they're very, very prickly, really difficult to handle. These bushes look lovely.
They're fine. They've been a real surprise.
Yeah.
When we brought them over, we thought, well, we don't want to bring over 10 bushes and try them. We thought, well, if we're going to have a problem, we might as well have a really big problem.
I like your attitude.
Yeah, so go for it. So I'm liking this guy. I really am. Yeah.
So we planted 2,000.
2,000 bushes. You could go for it. That's a big problem if it doesn't work.
Yeah. Nobody knew whether they'd even grow in England. Mm. So
can I ask, sorry to butt in there, Sue, are these commercially grown in the northwest US? Is that how you source them, kind of thing?
Yeah, we actually end up buying our plants from Poland.
Wow.
Because in actual fact, Poland is now the world's largest producer of aronia berries.
Okay.
But there's Russia produces a lot, Serbia, Croatia, Greece, all over the sort of Eastern Europe.
Because in Eastern Europe, these are fairly familiar, aren't they? We just don't have them over here. Yeah. You've got loads of products here, and your name is Andrew Tickle. That is your actual
name
from your birth. And you've called your products Tickleberries, which is brilliant.
Which is fabulous. Love that.
Yeah. And I like the fact that he's really into making big mistakes. I like that as well.
Yeah.
So, Paul, I've got some 100% Aronia berry juice here. Would you like to try some?
I would.
Mm. And it's called Tickleberries, Nature's Gift to You. And the colour is absolutely deep, deep, deep purpley black. It looks gorgeous, doesn't it? Yeah.
I was going to say black currency.
Can you talk while I pour some out?
Yeah, of course I can. Yeah.
I actually think it tastes like red wine without the alcohol.
Okay. Or you could be onto something here, Andrew. Oh, sorry, I'm just giving it a sniff. So you started growing this crop with 2,000 bushes.
Yeah.
Talk us through what happened the first time. I mean, it must have been nerve-wracking.
Well, ironically, we planted every single one by hand. And the first thing that we were advised to do was to cut the tops off them, having bought them across from Europe, because that way they increased the amount of branching and the amount of root structure they put down without actually having to produce fruit the first year. Mm. So we planted them, and to my surprise and to everybody else's surprise, absolutely every single plant grew.
Wow.
Well, Kent really is famed for fruit trees, and I've got fruit trees in my garden, planted tiny little sticks almost, you know, and four years later, these trees are, you know, 15 foot high. Mm. And there is something, I don't know what it is about Kent, for some reason fruit just grows really, really well.
So soil, isn't it?
It doesn't surprise me at all. Mm. Right, I've just smelt this, Paul.
I've just tasted it.
It smells really earthy. In a sort of earthiness, and I've just tasted it. It does have that little, I was going to say dusty, which sounds like it's a bad thing, but it's not. Dusty, lovely, earthy taste.
Absolutely.
That you get, which actually is quite a lot like elderberries, actually. Mm. It's lovely.
It does have the body of wine, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It has a body like wine, as you say, without the alcohol. Yeah. It's not, and I don't mean this negatively, it's a slightly sour taste.
Yep.
It's not sweet.
But I like
it. It's not offensively sour.
It's not offensively sour at all. Sophie from Alicia Catering's here. Sophie, you're just having a quick slurp. What are you thinking? Because obviously you're a nice foodie.
Yes, it is very good, very tasty, and we can really feel the fruits.
I think so.
Very good. Yeah.
I also find that, you know, other fruit juices, for me, I just, you know, you can't drink them all evening because you're going to be ill. Do you know what I mean? The acidic content's too high.
Yeah.
So I'm not so sure it's sour for me. I think it's just not that really sort of acidic-y fruitiness.
It's not cloyingly sweet. Yeah.
No, you could definitely replace that with wine if you were driving one night.
As someone that's teetotal, And I struggle with things to drink. Yeah. Yeah, you know, you can only drink so much, you know, cola or, you know, orange juice or whatever, and it just gets boring after a while. And I don't particularly like sweet things either. So a drink like that ticks an awful lot of boxes. But what staggered me is the body of it and the colour of it. If you had that in a glass...
You would think that was red wine.
If you had that in a glass, people would just assume you had a glass of red wine.
What you need to do is you need to, Andrew, you need to get in contact with like EastEnders and Coronation Street. So when they're filming and they have to look like they're drinking something, this is the perfect replacement.
Well, exactly.
You should phone up all the television companies.
It does actually do that the same thing. If you drop some on the floor, it looks like someone's been murdered because it splatters everywhere.
Oh, quickly moving swiftly on there. So you've got some other products here.
Yeah.
We've got some... vinegar, and we've had some lovely vinegars here again because Kent's the centre of fruit production, in my personal opinion. Yep. So we've had some lovely raspberry vinegars. So we've got some Aronia berry vinegars. Mm-hmm. We'll have a little taste of that in a minute, and then you've got some dried, I can never say it, Aronia berries.
Yep.
What do you do with those, Andrew? They're obviously almost like dried. You know, we get dried apricots and stuff like that. That's what you've done.
Exactly the same. Yeah, they've been dehydrated. You can eat them. Yeah, they're quite dry,
come on, don't keep them to yourselves.
They keep on giving up flavour. You sort of think they're getting a bit dry and sticky, and I can't really. And then they get more flavour coming. They're really strange. But the idea is for those is we're going to put them into cakes and breads and Christmas puddings and flapjacks and things like that.
You could use them like currants.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah.
yeah. yeah.
Yeah.
I have to say, I'm not quite as keen on those.
They're very dry, aren't they?
They're quite dry.
Quite dry, but I can imagine as a cooking ingredient.
I was going to say,
I think that would release the flavour.
Yeah, if you put that in a cake or a bun in the way that you would use currants or sultanas, I think it would really work. Yeah. You've also got some very interesting purple powder.
Yeah, so I've got a jar here, and then it does look like powder, exactly
it
like powder.
Yeah.
And I would describe the colour as almost lilac colour. What is this? This is dried. It's just dried. It's berries.
Yeah, basically, no, what actually happened was there's a process called spray drying, which is an industrial process that I don't really understand. But fundamentally, we sent a load of our 100% pure juice down to a factory in Dorset who spray dry juices. And that's what it made. It's a pure powder.
That's great. And what are you going to use it for? Sorry, Paul.
Yeah, I was going to say exactly the same.
Well, the idea there is that maybe we'll put it into sachets so people can put it into yogurts directly or straight into smoothies or sprinkle it on their breakfast cereals, because fundamentally all the properties of the berry are still there.
So fundamentally, Andrew, you're growing this stuff. Have you still got 2,000 bushes or have you moved on from that?
We planted another 2,000 the next year, so we've got 4,000 now.
Have you?
Yeah, it's not a big mistake now, though. It's real huge enterprise.
Well, and also it has to be solved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In other words, it's big enough to make me continuously try and develop the business.
Right.
Whereas if it was a small one and it wasn't really working or you wanted to do something for a fortnight, you could walk away.
Yeah.
I did actually have to go and buy a harvester to pick these berries.
Right, okay.
Simply because each berry weighs about a gram. And you can get, say, six kilos on a berry, on a bush.
Right.
So there's 6,000 berries on a bush. Well, to pick those by hand, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So we had to get a harvester as well.
Well, surely then, with that type of level of yield, it must be a really good product. If you can really, I know this is a new business, but it must be a great product to have that much yield off one bush.
It would, if I can get it right. I think that the yields should increase year on year for about 4 or 5 years, and when the bush gets too big, you can actually cut it down and it just regenerates and regrows again. So hopefully it should be a lot of input at the beginning and then the returns come later
on. This has got to be so much better than say, strawberries, which are...
Strawberries are nice, though, aren't they?
They are. No, but I meant in terms of as business, because you've got to start again almost every year, haven't you, with strawberries?
Yeah, it's very much high input, high return strawberries.
Yeah,
this is low input and a return that's unknown at the moment, simply because nobody knows what they are.
Well, it's one of the questions I was going to ask, and as you know, that Paul and I both sort of run businesses. There's one thing coming up with something where there's no competition, which is a great place in the market to be. However, you know, your marketing problem here is that people haven't heard of them. So how are you, what are you trying to do to sort of solve that? Because now I've tasted this, I'm definitely up for this juice, it's lovely. How are you trying to solve that from a business perspective?
You have to take it in sensible chunks. If you try and hit the whole dartboard at one go, you're just going to fail completely.
Sure.
So my thinking was that when we had a crop that was big enough, which wasn't in year one, it was in year two, we had to be very careful then not to oversell it, because if we ran out, we'd have to start all over again or wait till the next season. So we've had to wait until we've had enough berries in the system to actually allow us to give continuity. So last year, for instance, we spent a lot of time doing awareness, and we were very lucky, actually. We won 5 really major prizes. We won the specialist.
I was going to say, you're award winning already. Well done.
Yeah.
I have to say, I actually love the branding as well.
Yeah, it's good.
And I think you could probably drop the aronia berry things and just go with tickleberries.
And label it across the country as tickleberries.
And label it as tickleberries. Because
well, in a
I
way,
think
then, you'd own it. You'd own it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would. And I think that would work far better, because then people don't have to bother asking you what they are. It's just tickleberries, isn't it?
It's an Andrew Tickleberry.
Yeah,
it's good. I also read, this is on your website, that you can actually add these to beer or cider, and then they count as part of your 5 a day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that true?
It's
only a bloke could come up with that.
It's on his website, Paul.
Yeah, really. It must be true, then.
It must be true.
Drink loads of cider, but just pop a couple of berries in and, you know.
Sorted.
Yeah.
Cool.
It does make a very nice red cider.
I bet it does.
So are you selling these products now to the market?
We only sell online.
Okay.
Okay, through the website at the moment. We've looked at several different ways of selling. There are several issues. One is maintaining the supply, because obviously if we do get a rush of interest, we don't want to be running out.
Yep.
B, if everyone says, oh, well, why don't you go give it to a major supermarket or a national chain? Well, again, we haven't got enough to go round and we haven't got enough to replenish. So
sure.
What we're doing at the moment is the online people know what they're buying. In other words, they've heard of Aronia berries already. They know why they're buying them.
Right.
And they'll place the order. Okay. What we now have to do is to increase the number of people who buy them.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. The website address is aroniaberriesuk.co.uk. So that's aroniaberriesuk.co.uk. I am certainly having trouble with my teeth. I would recommend the juice, especially if, you know, say, if I was driving one night, I would definitely take some of that because I really struggle to find something that I would enjoy all evening and not get sick of.
You can sip that slowly in the same way that you would sip wine. Whereas with fruit juice and stuff like that, after the second glass, it gets sickly anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. The other nice thing, and I know this sounds really silly, but there is a little bit of peer pressure sometimes when you're not drinking one evening. You could easily have that in a red wine glass and nobody would know the difference, would they, that you weren't drinking?
No, that's true. Until you're the only one standing up straight. Yeah.
Have I got a little time to explain another little thing? In the old days, they used to transport fruit around the world on wooden boats and in wooden casks, and they used to preserve the fruit in vinegar. Okay, and at the end of the journey, they would take the fruit out and obviously eat the fruit, but they then were left with the vinegar, which was called a shrub.
Right.
And a drinking vinegar is called a shrub, which is a fruit-based vinegar.
Right.
And fundamentally, the vinegar that you got in front of you, if you add soda water to that, it's very, very nearly a shrub and it makes a really, really refreshing drink.
Really?
Yeah. We've had some lovely raspberry vinegars here that actually are a shrub, so to speak. Well, that's fascinating. We've got a little snippet of More Than Meat in a minute. And obviously, Andrew's going to stay with us. And then we're going to talk to Sophie about her catering, which is equally as fascinating. Great programme today already. Don't
absolutely.
Yeah.
So shall we hear from the guys at Meat?
It's Barry. From More Than Meat.
Barry from More Than Meat. We met him at the allergy show,
indeed,
did we not?
That's right.
Let's have a hear.
So we're at the Allergy and Free From show and I'm here with Barry from More Than Meat and he's going to tell us a little bit about his product.
Hi there. We are serving a jerk burger, which is one of our most popular products. It's made with wheat protein. It's a blend of plant proteins with whole foods, and this one is made with red kidney beans that are pureed, and then we add thyme, lime, fresh lime, fresh onions that are sauteed but without any oil, and then it's flavored with a jerk seasoning and some chili and some cinnamon and thyme.
That sounds delicious and it smells really good as well. So tell me about More Than Meat. How did that come about?
I studied plant-based nutrition at Cornell University under Professor Colin Campbell, who wrote the China Study. And having finished that course, I started eating a plant-based diet and couldn't find products that I really felt comfortable with because they weren't, a lot of the vegan convenience foods weren't acceptable to me because they had too much salt, fat and sugar in them. So I decided to make my own and then started selling them.
Okay, that sounds great. So basically what you've done is you've responded to something that you wanted and made it yourself, which I think we need more of, really. So like you get lots and lots of convenience food, if you're not cooking it yourself, and like, you know, you can't be blamed for giving it a go. But I think it is still important to be aware of what exactly you're eating. So none of your products would have any of the...
So none of our products have any oil in them, for a start, so we don't add any fat when we're making the products. We don't add any kind of additives. We don't use any fillers. All of our ingredients have as much integrity as possible. So we use whole apples, for example, in the More Than Meat lawn sausages. We use whole onions, fresh garlic. Don't use powdered onions or garlic or anything like that. The casserole has butter beans and beautiful carrot, organic carrots and celery and onions.
Okay, that sounds great. And so your products are all really easy to cook as well. So if we're at home, what do we need to do?
Yeah. So the all of our products except for the sausage rolls are already cooked. All you need to do is defrost them. So with the casserole, you would pop it in the microwave or in a saucepan and heat it, just bring it gently to the boil and then simmer it for a few minutes and then serve. With all of the burgers, they're already cooked. You just, from frozen, in a low pan, a pan on a low light with a little bit of oil because they don't have any added fats in them, and just sauté them for a few minutes until they're just golden on the outside and hot on the inside. Or you can grill them, or you can barbecue them because they're nice and robust for a barbecue.
So they are like a good meat replacement, really. I can say it does look like meat as well. What's the texture like? So what's the feel like of it on your hands?
So the texture is, it's essentially it's a seitan product, so it's made with wheat protein. But we've got a process by which we get a lot of flavor into it. And then we vary the texture using the pulses and beans that we use, plus oats and chickpea flour and stuff, because that really helps you to manage the texture. I was aiming at a texture where a burger should be chewy. It should have a texture that has some resistance, and that's what I was aiming to achieve, so that when you eat it, your mind says, yeah, this is a burger. This is something that I'm comfortable with because it's what I'm expecting. It's not anything foreign. It's not something that is crumbly texture, because I think a lot of the vegan and vegetarian burgers on the market don't have that kind of integrity.
Yeah, I completely agree. So I just got to say as well, it just smells beautiful after your chef just threw all those cubes of cubes of more than meat back in the frying pan. So what exactly are you doing here? So what have you got in the pan?
Basically, I'm just trying to maintain it warm.
What's the oil?
It's just a little bit of vegetable oil, just to avoid it would dry it up. Of course, these are samples, so they're cut small. So when it would be actually sold as a burger, it would maintain more of its own moisture inside.
And how long would you recommend cooking it for?
So about 4 minutes aside, 4 to 5 minutes aside on a low heat, literally with a teaspoon of, we use rapeseed oil to cook our products in.
And are there any seasoning at all? Are they already seasoned?
They're already seasoned. I mean, you really, with this one, I would add perhaps something like, a bun and a burger, and maybe with a jerk burger, something refreshing because it's quite spicy. So you maybe a mango salsa or like one of the things I do regularly is griddle some pineapple. So you've got that warmth and the sweetness of the pineapple that goes with it, which cools the palate after the chili. With the classic burger, you can use vegan cheese. I make a vegan cheese which is slightly melty, so you get a nice sort of unctuous cheesy flavor with it. The casserole is quite highly spiced. We are very careful about salt. All our products are low in salt, fat, and sugar. So we use tamari, for example, for the sodium, for the salty sort of hit, but you don't get the same level of salt and sodium in the product as a result.
That sounds brilliant. I mean, this sounds like a really conscientious product, and it smells amazing. Can we get a little taster? Can we go grab for Jeremy?
Of course, yeah, by all means.
I'm going to make Jeremy do it because I'm unfortunately gluten-free, but I am very jealous. And my mouth is watering in, like, jealousy right now. So what do you think?
It's delicious.
Does it taste like burger?
It does, yeah. It's got a spicy kick to it as well. Wow.
Yeah?
Yeah,
how would you think you'd eat that? What would you put on it, sauce-wise?
Ketchup.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say that. Maybe, potentially, yeah.
That's something that you think that you might eat, and it seems quite easy to use.
Great meat alternative for sure. Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. Thank you very much, Barry.
My pleasure.
I will look forward to seeing all your products a bit more widely available. Do you have a website?
We do. It's morethanmeat.co.uk.
Okay. Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Oh, there you go. More Than Meat with Barry. I saw the pictures of that. It looked wonderful.
Yeah. People just love hamburgers, don't they? Like, people love burgers, you know, and they love
really?
That little different toppings, and everybody's got their own way of doing it. But I do think people are looking for alternatives to beef in a burger.
Mm.
So it's really interesting. There's more and more people, isn't there, coming up with different types of burgers. My favourite is tuna burger. I love tuna.
Tuna burger?
Yeah, if you get a really lovely slice of fresh tuna,
right,
it tastes amazing in a burger.
Right.
And most people don't sort of do it. But I think people are looking for alternatives to meat. And the great thing about that is you don't have to worry about whether it's all cooked through. Because sometimes with beef, you have to be really, really careful, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
If you've got minced beef, if you're making a burger. So that sounded like a great alternative, alternative. So good old Barry. Good old Barry.
Nice one.
So Alicia Catering. Alicia Catering started by Sophie Andre. And she hand makes breakfast boxes and little food aperitifs, as she calls them. We might call them like hors d'oeuvres or something like that. And she uses waste food. And this is brilliant. I love this, Paul. She uses waste food, but from local artisan producers.
Right.
And if you go on their website, Paul, the food looks really delicious and they'll deliver it to you, which is just the sort of thing that you need. Probably not where you live. And I guess, and I'm hearing this phrase more and more, it's called rescued food. So we were talking to Toast Ale, weren't we, the other week?
Yeah, absolutely.
But this rescued food, I really like this idea.
So do you go around cafes and the bits I haven't eaten?
No.
You scrape off the plates?
No.
It's not like how it was?
No.
Okay.
No, not exactly. I actually have partnerships with, as you say, local producers, artisans. Mm. So at the very beginning, the idea was to just promote good food, good ingredients, craft food, made locally. And then I understood that there is actually surplus. The artisans have surplus, they have leftovers, and the food is absolutely delicious. Mm. And it looks good. So
yeah, I love this business model, because what Sophie's doing is she's buying from the producers surplus at cut price, Paul.
Okay.
But this means that they can make a small profit from there and get additional revenue from their food waste.
Right, okay.
What a great circle.
Absolutely.
Of stuff.
I want to understand the concept here. I think I do, but I want to understand the concept of... Because when you say food waste, it can conjure up kind of...
Like what's in the bin. No.
Yeah. I imagined her going out early in the morning and emptying people's bins.
Yeah. Like, did you have that food
she
waste?
She looks that type, doesn't she?
Yeah. She looks beautiful, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't think so, no.
Yeah. So when you say food waste from artisan producers, is that just kind of things that have gone slightly wrong, so they're not the right shape or whatever? Is that how it works, really?
Yes, exactly.
Or just off cuts or something like that?
Yes. Yeah. So, for instance, for breakfast, you can have granola.
Yeah.
And in the granola, you use oats.
Yep.
And sometimes when you bake granola, the oats are a bit smaller.
Yep.
For instance. Yep. So that's one example. It's a question of shape. It doesn't pass the shape control.
Yeah, I get that. Yep.
Or another example would be the expiry date. You have the producer of yogurt, for instance, and they have plenty of yogurt, a huge quantity. But sometimes they have orders that are cancelled. So when they have cancelled orders, they cannot sell any more their yogurt, so they have to throw this away.
Leftover, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So it's just a brilliant idea if you think about it.
Oh, thanks, fabulous.
And I think this rescued food is a good description.
I think that's a much better description than waste food, to be honest. Rescue food, I love. Mm. What made you think about this?
It was actually at the beginning, I didn't really have the idea of using rescued food. The idea was to promote good food, local food. But then I met many producers, many artisans, and I understood that there is surplus and they waste quite a big quantity, actually, of their production.
And quality stuff as well.
Yes, yeah. It is of a high quality. Mm. There is a lot of effort, a lot of work behind the product.
And as you said, Sue, it's a really high overhead for a small producer to have food waste. Or food that they can't use, or
whatever. That will be one of the things that you measure in restaurants as well.
Yeah.
Is your amount of food waste, and they will work really hard to reduce that because it absolutely affects your profit.
Mm.
So to make money out of what you would discard as a premium artisan producer is like genius if you think about it. It's absolutely genius. The stuff that Sophie does is things like bread, granola, antipasti, hummus, cheeses, chutneys, teas, and even beers like Toast Ale.
Even what, sorry?
Even beers like Toast Ale, who were show recently. So you've got some stuff in front of us, Sophie. Also, Paul hasn't eaten a lunch today.
And I'm hungry.
Whilst he really enjoyed his tickleberry juice, I know he's a little bit hungry. Can you just talk us through some of the things that you've got there?
Sure. So we've got some crisp bread.
Hmm.
The crisp bread is very good, very tasty, and with seeds. It's made with chickpea flour, so it's as well gluten-free. But when you bake the crisp bread, sometimes it can break. And this crisp bread is actually broken in two pieces, which is fine because it still looks good and the taste is not affected.
Mm.
You have so crisp bread, you have hummus. It's made by chickpea. And this one is actually carrot and ginger, very nice hummus. And she uses wonky carrot.
I'm sorry, we're laughing because we're crunching on this bread and we're trying not to get too close to the microphone.
That is fabulous. Sorry to crunch in your ears.
So, yes, the hummus is made with wonky vegetables. The wonky vegetables is just a nice name to say that they have a weird shape or they have some...
They're dots, proper vegetables, essentially. Really. Yes. That's what vegetables are supposed to look like. Those are nice, aren't they, Paul? What does it say on the packet?
It's chickpea and butter straws with seeds and black pepper. And I have to say, that kind of snack food is the kind of thing I really love. I'm a big cheese straw fan and
I love cheese straws, all
those kind of things. And that is absolutely lovely. It is a bit crunchy. So I was making a bit of noise down the microphone. I'm sorry about that.
And you've also got some meat in front of you there, Paul.
I have.
What's that?
I've got slices of British pork with a mushroom truffle. Mm. Oh, wow. So let me have a go at that. Mmm.
Mm. You're supposed to say something more.
I can't. I'm eating. It would be rude. That is fabulous. So, Sophie, talk us through that before she brings me more food. First of all, tell me about the chickpea and butter straws.
So it is made by Easybean. Christina, the founder of the company, launched it, and she makes a fabulous pot of lunch meals, but she also makes chickpea crisp bread. And when she bake it, they sometimes some leftovers because it's broken when it's made. But still, as you said, it's still very crunchy and very nice.
So we've got a see-through bag of them there in front of Paul, who's obviously going to demolish all of them. And they are a little bit broken and all that. But do you know that doesn't matter, does it?
I wouldn't have noticed.
No, you're too busy eating. You're dipping into the hummus there. What's that, Paul?
I've got a jar here that is mustard yellow in colour, and it's hummus with carrot and ginger and chickpeas.
Yes.
And I'm dipping my straws in it as well at the same time. And I have to say, I'm really enjoying this. So do talk amongst yourselves.
Well, I can't really say anything because I'm eating that meat stuff. What is it?
Pork.
Mm. With, is it truffles?
It's British pork with mushroom truffle.
It's really, really nice. Mm. Very, very tasty. So... Tell me, I know you deliver, don't you? But you're in central London. I know your guys deliver by foot or by bike because it's very environmentally friendly. If I was to sign up to what you do, I was at my desk early. I was at my desk early this morning at 7 o'clock, for example, and feeling a little bit hungry about 8 o'clock. How could I use your service? What exactly happens?
You can order online on the website. You can just give me a call or send me an email and I can deliver to you, as I said, some breakfast or aperitif, which is a light dinner or pre-dinner, and I deliver for meetings or for events.
So what would I have in my breakfast box? Do I choose or do you have a standard?
Is it a surprise is what you're saying? You know, what have we got today?
Yeah.
What's today's leftovers kind of thing?
You have menus on the website, right. So you can choose your menu. And it's true that sometimes I can have something different, some other products, because sometimes surplus can be unexpected. But yes, usually you have the menu and you can select the product from here.
I'd be quite happy with what we've just eaten for a little bit of sort of continental breakfast with those lovely pork. Mm. I quite like those. You've got some bread there as well, haven't you? Is that bread that you've made yourself or is that rescued?
Yes, it is rescued bread. I buy it at the end of the day at local bakeries. They make some delicious bread, but at the end of the day, of course, not everything is gone.
Yeah,
so
sure.
They have leftovers and they can make bread pudding, which is delicious.
Yep.
But still, they still have big quantity of leftovers, so I buy some of them.
Okay, and so you've got that at the end of the day. So what do you do with it?
I use it for the day after, in the morning to make breakfast. I can make toast with butter and marmalade. And again, the marmalade is made with wonky fruits.
Right.
This is a really great idea.
This is really cool, isn't it?
It's so good. So let's talk a little bit about you, Sophie. I know you only started this in May, so it's very, very, very new. And you haven't been living in London long, have you? How long have you been in London?
Since January.
So you've literally been in this, situation in London, started a business. We love all this entrepreneurial spirit. And before, you lived in France, obviously.
Yes, I lived in France.
Okay. And what about doing business here in England as opposed to France? Why come over here and start a business?
I worked for startups in France before, so I was in this area. But when I arrived in London, people were very welcoming. I had a chance to meet with many nice entrepreneurs, charities, and food businesses as well. So they were very open to new things, and people are very open-minded, and they like to eat some food. I would say that the main difference with France regarding the food is that British people tend to buy a lot food outside for lunch, for instance.
Yeah, as opposed to making it themselves.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
There's a real culture, particularly in London, I think. And we're getting more and more guests as well, people who are doing delivery services, but cooking amazing food from scratch, but doing all that and then delivering it, and people eating preparing food less and less in the home, but looking for alternatives of good cooked food or good delivered food, actually.
Yes.
There's quite a culture of that, I think, in London. I don't know about the other cities quite so much at the moment. So it's capitalising on that.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because things are... Sorry. Excuse me.
A bit of pork's gone down the wrong way.
That'll teach me to eat too quickly.
It's a little bit spicy.
No, it's fine. It tastes fine. I was just trying to scoff it quickly so that I could talk again. You've got this concept going on where people either are doing more and more of their own cooking at home or increasingly doing no cooking at all. And especially in big cities like London or Manchester or Leeds, you're now finding some homes don't even have kitchens.
Space is so small.
So they're eating from a choice of menus of takeaway food.
Also, people are saying that it's actually much easier to set up a business in the UK than it is in other parts of Europe. Would you say that, you know, in terms of red tape and, you know, it's quite quick? Would you agree with that, having just started?
In France, it's pretty easy. I cannot say for the other countries, but in France, it is easy to set up a business.
Okay.
Maybe the main difference would be the investment. It's not too difficult to get investment in early stage in France and in London as well. But in London, I guess you can get higher investment, bigger investment than in France.
Yeah, there's a lot of angel investors at the moment looking for good concepts. So I think there is a culture at the moment of people looking for places to invest. And that's because the bank rates are so rubbish. There's no point having money in the bank, is there, at the moment? Not at all.
Well, the banks are actually talking about charging you to keep your money.
Yeah, because it's going to go into negative...
Yeah, because it's negative interest rates.
Yeah, very interesting. So I know also that you've worked for charities for most of your working life, and that includes in America, France and Senegal. Where did you used to, what sort of charities did you used to work for? Because this is obviously a very charitable, social type enterprise, I think.
I worked for startups. So I worked in France for digital startups in the education area, mostly, and in Senegal as well. The idea was actually to implement some digital library in Senegal for students. And in the USA, I worked, as you said, for a charity. The charity welcomed young homeless people. And my goal was to turn the charity into a social enterprise, so to find a new business model so that the young people could find a way to earn their living. I really like the idea of making money and making goods, making something good
time.
Out of it.
Yeah.
Yes. So when I arrived in London, I thought that I should maybe try to copy a little bit the model and to do something good about that as well.
Well, it's a very good circular sort of social enterprise, which is what we found with Toast as well, in that they were making ale, and then with the profits they were putting that in their charity to try and cut down on food waste. So again, a really nice sort of circular model.
It's one of those nice things as we move into the 21st century about how things are changing in terms of how people do business, and this whole mix of virtuous businesses, collaboration, the whole spirit of collaboration now
partnerships and
associations. Back in the last century, that didn't happen very often. It was all about competition and killing the competition, and I find that fading away. I own a business in Canterbury, actually, which is a community workspace for creative people, and again, you see that lots of people working in the same industry, but rather than competing with each other, they collaborate and they work on projects together. So this virtuous circle works for everybody. I think it's a fabulous idea.
Yeah, it's a fabulous thing
you've done.
Yeah. I think when you see sort of the BHS and the Greens and the Sports Direct and people are people are really appalled by that sort corporate behaviour, and it doesn't do any of us any favours. Mm. And I must say that although business is tough for most of us because you've got to get sales, I'm not finding people doing business like that at all, and I'm not finding people treating their staff badly often. Mm. And those people that do should be hounded out and really revealed as not being the normal standard.
It's very old school now.
Really
old
school.
And it's not how it's done anymore, no. And it's giving... those of us in business that try to be ethical and moral and part of the community, it gives us a bad name. And it's not fair because most, 99% of businesses aren't like that.
Yeah, and I know you wouldn't say this much, Paul, because although I tease you all the time, you're actually a very modest man. But, you give a lot of your time, precious time, to help businesses, grow. And there's that phrase, isn't it? Send the elevator down, get new businesses trying to help them learn from. I've made ridiculous mistakes in business. Try and get them to help them. So we're seeing more of these sorts of models. It's great, actually. I'm just so proud of that.
Yeah, I think it's fabulous. And also for someone like Sophie to rock up in a foreign country and go, do you know what? I'll start a business. Yeah.
Well done. Well done.
Yeah, why not? I'll just nail that. And wow, look what I've done. And everybody goes, woo.
Okay, so you're six. Well, not even 6 months in. God, blimey, you're like 4 or 5 months in. So how are you going to scale? What are you going to do? Or are you quite happy on a small model? What's your ambitions?
My next step is to employ people. So I would like to have 30% of the team from people who come from disadvantaged background, young people who didn't have the chance to go to school, for instance. So my next step is to set up a training program to get more people involved, get a job, and have a sustainable income with accredited trainings. And so that I will be able to expand the activity, deliver to more businesses, and have more partnership with additional artisans.
And how do you choose your artisans? How do you find them? Because you must be busy doing your business all day, and then you've got to find these artisans. How do you do it?
I really like going on markets, tasting many products.
I do too.
She goes shopping.
Yeah, basically, yes.
Yeah, that's what she does. She goes shopping.
But she puts it down to business expenses.
Exactly.
Do you know, she's thought of every angle.
She's got every angle nailed down here, hasn't she? Yeah.
So it's a very nice job. I just have to taste the food. And then I
start a conversation.
Yes, with the producer.
That's really good. Andrew, again, you've almost done the same in that you've taken some land which hardly can grow anything and then found something that you can turn into a business. Surely that's a good use of land as well.
I think it's fully sustainable.
Yeah.
And the beauty of this particular crop is the fact that it's so hardy that very, very few pests actually attack it.
Mm.
And so we can actually rely on natural predation to keep the pests down. In actual fact, it's quite interesting because pesticides and things like that are quite current at the moment, in so much as they're all being stopped and one thing or another. But there is actually no approved pesticides or anything for aronia berries. So
that's because nobody's heard of them, Andrew. That's
so
why.
I can't use any anyhow, even if I had to.
Yeah, that's good. And how are you going to scale up with yours? I mean, obviously, you've been on the farm since you were born, actually.
Well, I've got the option of just planting more. Mm-hmm. But the hardest part is actually now, at this moment in time, is actually getting from awareness to actually profitable sales.
Sure.
Yeah. And so my ambition is that once I've got to the stage where I can sell my whole crop every year, I will then plant more.
Yeah.
And I'll scale it that way.
Yeah. Do you remember that grower we had here from Woodchurch who made that lovely sparkling wine?
I do indeed.
Do you remember he just sort of rocked up one, well, I didn't quite, but he rocked up one day and thought, I'll start a vineyard.
I'll plant some vines. he did. He literally did. In a corner of one of the fields, he planted some vines.
This is in Woodchurch in England.
Yeah, and he made a couple of bottles of sparkling wine and people went, that was nice. So he planted a bit more.
And a bit more and a bit more.
And a bit more and a bit more and a bit more. And then eventually turned his whole farm into a vineyard.
But I think that's right. It's about taking the cost on when you can afford it. Mm. Although I do love the fact that you said, if I'm going to make a mistake, I'll make a big mistake and plant 2,000
bushels. I love that. I think that's a quote.
Not 20. Yeah. Let's go for it. What, 200? No, 2,000.
Yeah. I think that's the quote of the year on the Food Talk Show, don't you?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, if you're going to make a mistake, go for it big time. Yeah, I love it. I love the thinking behind that. That's brilliant.
That's really good.
Yeah.
So going back to Sophie, her website is aliciacatering.com. Where did you get the name Alicia? What's that? Because it's not your name. Your name's Sophie Andre. So
yes, it actually comes from the mythology, the Greek, ancient Greek people. are going to the Elysian Fields, which is the afterlife place for them to go where everything is nice.
Yeah, yeah.
So it refers to the second life of the product.
Second life, of course it would. It's a rescue product. Yep, it's a second life.
It's been thought through this, hasn't it? It's really been thought through this.
Yeah, and I quite like that. I quite like that sort of Greek link, you know, in terms Elysian of mythology.
Fields.
Yeah, in terms of mythology. Very, very good. And how many people in the team so far? It's just you, isn't it?
For now, yes. Hard, it's just
this
me.
Is the hardest bit, I think, isn't it? Where you move from that to the next level. Well, I really like what you're doing. The products we've tasted are fantastic, aren't they, Paul?
Well, the ones I've got in my pocket that I'm taking home, those ones.
I can't actually see that there's much left in front of you.
Absolutely. I've eaten all the meat and and half the chickpea straws, actually. Sorry about that.
And they're going to be in his car on the way home.
They are.
You've tasted the hummus. There's also some granola there. So can you take that home, Paul? So that you have some decent breakfast as opposed to some horrible breakfast, whatever it is that you eat.
What did I have this morning?
I'd hate you mentioning the word McDonald's. I hate it.
I had an egg McMuffin. Sorry.
It's terrible. Can you have some granola? Because that looks lovely.
I can't see it. You're pointing. I can't see it over there.
Rescued so I'm granola. What else do we have? We've got some cheese. Where do you get your cheese from?
From local cheesemongers. They sometimes as well have surplus because when they mature the cheese, they might have some hole in the cheese. The ring may not be perfect.
Sure, yeah.
But still, the taste is the same.
Absolutely, yeah.
So great
once,
cheese.
Once it's on your toast, you don't notice the holes, do you, really?
Great cheese as well. Great cheese. So, Sophie Andre, Alicia Catering. And that's aliciacatering.com. If you're anywhere near central London, it's definitely worth having a look because if you like stuff delivered to your desk, why not have rescued food? I think that's being very socially responsible to do that. So that's really good. And as we know all the food waste stats, Paul, you know, 7 million tonnes of food and drink are thrown out of our homes every year.
Absolutely.
Enough to fill 23 million wheelie bins and all that. So I'm sure we're going to see more and more of this. And then, of course, we've got aronia berries, which I've learned a lot today.
Tickleberries.
I think we should call them tickleberries.
I'm calling them tickleberries. I'm going with that. Yeah.
I think we should call them tickleberries. And that's aroniaberriesuk.co.uk. Mm. And I actually really love the juice. I'm going to order some of that.
Mm.
It's a good one to have in the fridge if you are driving or don't fancy drinking quite so much. And then the burger thing. I mean, you're a man of burgers, aren't you?
Mm.
Yeah, mm. 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 But I do think you should try and look at some alternatives, Paul.
Do you?
Yeah, not eat so much meat. And there's loads and loads of these beautiful replacements for burgers. So I think you should give that a go, don't you?
Do you think so?
Yeah, I do. I'm not saying you should be vegan. Obviously, that's a little step too far.
Oh,
I don't even think you could probably manage to be vegetarian, could you?
No,
I didn't think so. So I think you should look at more than meat.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And as I said, the pictures I saw that were being bandied about on Twitter earlier look absolutely wonderful. Mm. And I'm quite happy to eat a product like that now and again.
As long as it... But I think the thing with those things is it's got to have the texture, which is why I like this aronia berry juice. It's got to have the texture and it's got to compete with meat if it's going to succeed.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and be that tasty, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's really good. And then the other thing I want to talk about, Paul, very briefly before we close is we're doing a few more exhibitions.
We are.
Before Christmas. So we've got some really good sort of exhibitions. And we've got, you know, we've got speciality food and all that sort of stuff at Olympia. Mm. I think most of them are at Olympia.
Yeah.
So if there's anybody listening who is doing amazing things and is exhibiting at any of those shows, we've got our pop-up radio station, which we're doing more and more of.
We are indeed.
And it's really popular. So what we do is we rock up for the 3 days. We set up our, you know, our sort of temporary studio.
Mm.
We get people booked on, don't we? And then we run all these sort of interviews. At the time, we have a great time as well because we managed to taste everything under the sun.
When I started this show, I was a svelte, slim...
No, you weren't.
...young person.
No, you weren't. We certainly weren't young.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the pop-up radio station's really succeeding. And isn't it great to get around and about? And it's not always easy for people to come to a studio, but it's really great for us to go out. And
it's really good fun. It's really good fun. And we do what we call Vox Pop interviews. So they're short snippet interviews, 4 or 5 minutes, maybe 8 or 9 minutes, if you're particularly interesting or in depth. And
or we just love the product so much, we're chomping our way through it.
We just want to keep you there so we can eat a bit more. Yeah, that kind of thing.
That's more like it.
So it's all good fun. So hopefully we'll see you at one of those.
Definitely see you at one of those, yeah.
Cool.
And thank you to Sophie and to Andrew. Really different stuff, and really enjoyed the programme today.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us on the Food Talk Show, and we'll be back with you next Thursday.
We will.
Bye for now.
Bye now.